I'm Tracy Sable tonight on EWTN News Nightly. Speaking up, Vice President J.D. Vance gives a voice to those suffering under religious persecution around the world. The clock is ticking as the deadline to accept a federal employee buyout program approaches. We take a look at the effect it could have. Protecting women. President Trump signs an executive order to keep biological men out of women's sports. We have the details. And shoot for the stars. We have an exclusive discussion with the director of the Vatican Observatory. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, Vice President J.D. Vance calls religious freedom, quote, the bedrock of civil society in the United States of America and across the world, and says that faith calls us to treat one another with dignity. But at the same time, in a speech, he also slammed how thousands of recent U.S. taxpayer dollars have been spent overseas. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
That's right, Tracy. Vice President J.D. Vance addressed the International Religious Freedom Summit today here in the nation's capital. And the vice president emphasized at home and abroad, much more needs to be done to fully secure religious liberty for all people of faith.
Vice President J.D. Vance addresses the faithful in attendance, religious freedom advocates from around the globe representing the major faiths, including Christianity, Islam, and Judaism.
In China, across Europe, and throughout Africa and the Middle East, the first Trump administration took critical steps to protect the rights of the faithful, whether that was by rescuing pastors who were persecuted by foreign regimes, or bringing relief to the Yazidis, Christians, and other faith communities facing genocidal terror from ISIS.
And so far in the second Trump administration,
the president has issued orders to end the weaponization of the federal government against religious Americans, pardon pro-life protesters who were unjustly imprisoned under the last administration.
But Vance, who is Catholic, called it absurd how some U.S. tax dollars have been spent in recent years.
How did America get to the point where we're sending hundreds of thousands of taxpayer dollars abroad to NGOs that are dedicated to spreading atheism all over the globe? That is not what leadership on protecting the rights of the faithful looks like. And it ends with this administration.
Religious freedom advocate Katrina Lantos-Sweat told me the first Trump administration had a strong record on defending religious freedom. But now they're concerned about the Trump administration's clamping down on spending.
We hope, again, that support to key individuals, NGOs, faith communities on the ground in very, very difficult places, that support will not be cut off indefinitely because they need our help to fight this good fight.
President Trump, meanwhile, continues to make news. Today in the East Room of the White House, he signed an executive order banning men from competing against women directly in sports. And it's a move a majority of Americans agree with. Take a listen.
Under the Trump administration, we will defend the proud tradition of female athletes, and we will not allow men to beat up, injure, and cheat our women and our girls. From now on, women's sports will be only for women.
Now, on President Trump's, should say, on his first day in office, President Trump's first day in office, he ordered the federal government to define sex as only male and female, including on official documents like passports. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
All right, thank you, Owen. Well, confusion today among Republicans and some other lawmakers after a surprise announcement from President Trump regarding Gaza. In a press conference with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu last night, the president proposed the idea that the U.S. take over Gaza and suggested the Palestinians leave the area and go into neighboring countries, saying in part, quote, the whole place is demolished. It's unsafe. It's unsanitary. It's not a place where people want to live. Some lawmakers disagree.
It doesn't make sense. I mean, Gaza is secured. And it may be an upheaval, and it may be have an uncertain future and all of those things, but it's really not our business right now.
But it just does not make sense. And it is not reason. It's not something that we, as a people, as Americans, that we look at. It does not make us safer.
Meanwhile, the ceasefire remains in effect between Israel and Hamas, but more than 75 hostages are unaccounted for, and less than half are believed to be alive. Several families of those still held captive gathered with members of Congress at the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C. today for an emotional event. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales has more.
Good evening. The Museum of the Bible is a place where people come to learn about the Bible, but today it was all about Israel. An event organized by Family Research Council and Well-Versed brought together evangelicals from across the country to pray for the country of Israel and those who are still being held hostage. In your
During the three-hour prayer service, Speaker Mike Johnson and a dozen other lawmakers prayed with the congregation.
We gather with you this morning to seek the Lord's wisdom, to pray for his repentance for our country.
After the prayer service, families of Israeli hostages who are still being held by the terrorist group Hamas spoke. They tell me that they remain strong with the help of their faith.
I can feel him. Yes. I can feel him in my bones. That he's alive, I can feel what he feels. And I know that he survives, tries to do whatever he can to stay alive.
Ilay David says that his life completely changed that day. Now most of the time is dedicated to advocating for his brother, Eviatar, and the other hostages. He praises President Trump for his efforts.
I believe it's because of Trump's leadership and because he's brave enough. And he knows how to use his power efficiently.
Gal Bilbadra's brother, Guy, is also being held.
And I have so many things to tell him, but I don't know that when I see him, I don't know if I will have any words to say. I just want to hold him already. I just want to kiss him. I just want to tell him how much I missed him and I love him.
This is a fight between good and evil, right and wrong, hope versus hate. And we must stand united to defend freedom, justice, and religious tolerance.
So what can we do as Catholics? Family members who still have loved ones being held by Hamas say, never forget Israel and pray. At the Bible Museum in Washington, D.C., Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
USAID workers are scrambling following a Trump administration order to all but shut down the organization. Employees are set to be placed on administrative leave Friday night, while arrangements are being made to bring workers outside the United States home. Earlier today, demonstrators as well as Democratic lawmakers gathered on Capitol Hill to protest the dismantling of the agency.
We are going to fight procedurally and shut down any processes we can that are complicit in this.
Lawmakers and members of the crowd raised criticism of the involvement of Elon Musk in cutting federal programs. They also defended the work of USAID, calling it critical for the United States.
If Elon Musk wins and our foreign assistance completely ends, who will cheer and who will win? The cartels will win, terrorists will win, Russia will win, China will win.
USAID has been one of the agencies hardest hit by Musk's wider budget cuts, targeting wasteful spending in federal programs. And former officials with the agency are raising the alarm.
If we are in a country where the richest man can decide that the richest country will no longer help some of the poorest people, we are in a very, very dire place.
But this is not just about USAID. Organized demonstrations are popping up across the country. Thousands protested the actions of the Trump administration outside the state capitals of Texas, Michigan, Wisconsin, Georgia, and Indiana. Meanwhile, in Langley, Virginia, the CIA has sent out an agency-wide buyout offer to all of its employees. Workers can leave and get 8 months of pay. It's part of the president's plan to shrink the federal government. Many federal organizations have also extended similar offers, but the Central Intelligence Agency is the first major national security agency to do so. All this comes as tomorrow's deadline looms for other federal workers to accept or reject buyout offers. And for more on all of this, let's bring in Jonathan Bell, a federal labor attorney. Jonathan, great to be with you today. It is being reported that about 1% or about 20,000 workers so far have already taken the offer. That said, what are the stipulations of this buyout offer and who is eligible for it and who isn't?
It's really a crazy time. I've been representing federal employees for over 20 years, represented hundreds of thousands of them, and I've never seen anything like this during my tenure. I'm getting contracts sent to me left and right to review them, and the answer to your questions, quite simply, are each individual federal employee has to look at their unique circumstances to determine if this is a good offer. Basically, the offer is, like you said, 8 months of pay. They have to accept it by tomorrow midnight or just before midnight, the latest. They have to continue working until the end of the month during this transition. And then they basically have a paid vacation, accruing annual leave, sick leave, contributions to their TSP until September 30th. And after September 30th, they're basically out of a job. And during that time, they're actually allowed to work in the private sector so they could get another job and essentially double dip. But what I'm hesitant or telling federal employees to consider is there's something called discontinued service retirement, which people are not talking about, which when a job is, when you're subject to a RIF or they eliminate a position, the federal government has to offer you DSR, discontinued service retirement. That pays you for the rest of your life, not just 8 months. So if you've been working there for quite some time, like 20 years, you should really be considering that because that might trump any 8 month payment period. Very important you look at your individual facts and circumstances to determine if this is the right agreement for you.
Well, the people that are talking to you are very lucky because I'm sure a lot of people don't even know about that. And there's so much anxiety over this. And a lot of people, as you know, including a dozen attorneys general, are critical of this buyout offer. What's more, some claim it's illegal and say it's something that Congress actually needs to authorize. Jonathan, weigh in on this for us. I mean, is this buyout offer, is it legal and is it binding?
So that's a great question. I don't have the answer to that. This is uncharted territory, but I'm not telling people not to accept the offer. I'm not telling them to accept it. I'm saying that there are risks. There are certain challenges. Do I believe these people are going to be paid for 8 months? I do believe they are going to be paid. I do believe that the government's going to find funding. If they're losing their job, they're turning in, they're getting rid of their rights to continue working for the federal government, I do believe ultimately it's going to be funded, however it's funded. I think they're going to get paid. But at the same time, it is being challenged. There are unions and other federal employees, federal employee lawyers telling the federal employees not to accept it. But I think that's a mistake. I think it depends. If you're only working for the government for a year or two, and maybe you're not happy with your job, in that situation, you might, and let's say you're looking for another job already, you might want to accept this buyout. But another problem with the buyout is if you have a pending case against the government, like you filed an EEOC case because you feel like the government discriminated against you, there's general release language in there that also is not being discussed. So you're waiving your right to pursue those claims.
Well, Jonathan, thank you for, you know, shaking this all out for us. I know probably more questions than answers right now for these federal workers, but we appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Oswin is mourning the victims of what is being called the worst mass shooting in the country's history. While flags flew at half-mast, candles were placed outside the adult education center where the victims were shot. Police have already searched the suspects' home and are trying to determine a motive. However, officials do believe that he acted alone. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including a delicate situation. In an exclusive report, EWTN delves into the complex relationship between the U.S., Venezuela, and the Catholic Church. And good news on the job front, what the latest numbers are now showing. Back, the first group of migrants arrested in the U.S. arrived in Guantanamo Bay in Cuba. It comes after the president announced plans to use the base as a detainment center. The Department of Homeland Security says the group consists of 10 members of Trente Aragua. That is the gang that originated in Venezuelan prisons. Last week, the president ordered that an existing migrant detainment center at the base be expanded to hold around 30 5,000 people. Meanwhile, in Guatemala, Secretary of State Marco Rubio has reached a deal with President Bernardo Arevalo. The country will now accept migrants from other countries being deported from the U.S. The deportees would then be returned to their home countries at U.S. expense. Well, as we have seen in the past few weeks, the president's immigration policy is leading to changes in the relationship between the U.S. and Latin American countries. It has even led into run-ins with the Catholic Church. In Venezuela, the complexity of the situation is most apparent. EWTN's Andres Enriquez reports.
The first 2 weeks of the Trump administration have had a significant impact in the U.S.-Venezuela relations, turning away from Biden administration policies and placing the South American dictatorship in the spotlight.
Last Friday, President Trump surprisingly sent Richard Grenell, his envoy for special missions, to Caracas, where he met with dictator Nicolas Maduro, a move that has been widely criticized both inside and outside Venezuela. According to the White House, Grenell's visit revolved around two main themes: securing the cooperation of the Maduro regime in receiving repatriation flights for Venezuelan citizens who have violated U.S. laws, and ensuring that all American citizens detained in Venezuela are released. Grenell returned to Washington with six Americans who were imprisoned in Chavista jails, although he has said that at least six more Americans are still detained in Venezuela and that he will return to take them home. In addition, he assured that Maduro committed to receive the deportation flights. Grenell's efforts are framed by the Trump administration's decision to end temporary protected status for some 350,000 Venezuelans on U.S. soil. Trump canceled the redesignation made in 2023 by President Joe Biden's administration, which extended TPS and granted work permits to Venezuelans until April 2025. The U.S. bishops have labeled this decision as counterproductive and called President Trump to consider the adverse impact this measure will have on citizens and non-citizens alike. Terminating this temporary legal protection that allows people to work, pay taxes, and contribute to our society will only lead to more disruption and would appear to risk diverting the focus of enforcement efforts away from legitimate threats to public safety. In Venezuela, on the other hand, the Catholic Church called on believers to pray in order to hold on to hope and change the very difficult situations we have to live through every day. Young people take these requests very seriously, assuring that they are willing to stay in the country and work for the future.
Well, a message that I would say is quite positive is that we as young people can make a change in the country. There is a very complicated situation, but we young people can move forward a country that has all what it takes to succeed. As a young person, I want to stay here in the country and continue fighting for this Venezuela, which is a beautiful Venezuela full of opportunities. And I say this to all young people.
It is really very important. I think this new generation has an incredible mentality where I believe that we young people can make a great change for this country. Therefore, I am not leaving. I am staying not only to be close to my family, but together we can build a great future.
The bishop said that the greatest yearning of Venezuelans today is a true peace that responds to their most immediate needs and not the particular interests of political parties.
We have to love our country, our family. Yes, it is a difficult time. We are in this moment for a reason, and I believe we are God's instrument for other people. And with that same joy, we have to infect others so that they do not leave and raise our country.
The bishops added that there are still signs of hope in our country, that God is present in our midst, and that He continues to bring about good things in our reality. Meanwhile, we will continue to report the latest developments in Venezuela and their repercussions in the United States. From Caracas, Venezuela, Andres Enriquez, EWTN.
Well, in other news, your fast fashion online shopping might be safe for now, as the U.S. Postal Service reversed a decision that placed a ban on all inbound mail and packages from China and Hong Kong. The Post Office had made the announcement after the U.S. imposed an additional 10% tariff on Chinese goods and ended tax exemption for small-value parcels. USPS has not given a reason for the reversal, but said that it is working with Customs and Border Protection to avoid delivery disruptions as a result of the new tariff measure. Private sector employment numbers beat expectations last month. That is according to data revealed from payroll company ADP. It showed the U.S. private sector rose by roughly 183,000 jobs in January, attributed to businesses in trade, transportation, and hospitality. However, ADP's tabulations don't always correlate with the government's monthly jobs report, which is expected to be out this Friday. Well, up next on EWTN News Nightly, a look to the heavens. We speak to the director of the Vatican Observatory about his new book and why he says faith and science go hand in hand. Plus, setting love in motion, the mystery that Pope Francis is asking us all to meditate on. Francis encourages Christians to welcome Mary's presence in their lives.
Il Signore vi benedica tutti e vi protegga sempre da ogni male.
At the weekly talk, the Holy Father asked Father Giroli to read his catechesis since he is suffering from a cold. In his reflection, the Pope focused on the mystery of the visitation, observing how this illustrates that when we feel loved, we experience a force that sets love in motion. At the end of the audience, the Pope once again expressed his sorrow for, quote, the displaced people in Palestine. Well, finally tonight, a new book is shedding light on the close link between God and science. Written by astronomer Brother Guy Consimagno, A Jesuit's Guide to the Stars takes readers on a journey through the cosmos to appreciate the alignment of scripture, tradition, and the quest to see God in all things. The book brings together Brother Guy's studies as well as his personal journey as a man of faith. And joining us now in the studio today is Brother Guy Consimagno, director of the Vatican Observatory. Brother Guy, thank you so much for being here with us.
It's a delight to be here again.
Well, we love this. And also, for those who may not be familiar, tell us a little bit more about the Vatican Observatory.
Well, we like to say that we go back to the reform of the calendar in 1582.
Wow.
Because that's when the Vatican hired astronomers to figure out, you know, what we now call the Gregorian calendar. In 1891... Pope Leo XIII established a national observatory at the Vatican to show the world that the Church supports science. And we've been doing that ever since. We now have our headquarters in the Pope's summer home in Castel Gandolfo, which includes a beautiful visitor center. And then in Tucson, Arizona, we have a telescope in Mount Graham. So we're doing cutting-edge research as we're also carrying forth the message of how the heavens proclaim the glory of God.
Yeah, you do such fascinating work there, and you've written a number of fascinating books. Tell us about the latest one.
A few months ago, the fellows at Loyola Press said, Guy, we've got a great title for a book, A Jesuit's Guide to the Stars. Could you write the book?
Yeah.
And how can I not? So I pulled together a lot of ideas, some of my own experience, some of the history of the Jesuits working on science. Do you know that there's about 60 craters on the moon or asteroids named for Jesuits, Jesuit scientists,
no,
going back to really before Galileo. And this shows how the Jesuits have been involved in our understanding the universe. It's part of our Jesuit charism to find God in all things. What's more all things than the universe?
Yeah, that is really fascinating. And I'm sure a lot of people did not know that, myself included. Talk to us about the relationship between wonder, beauty, and science.
Why do we do the science? You know, at the end of the day, it's not to make you rich or famous. It's not to make better cell phones. That's technology, which is wonderful but different. We do science because we're curious about the universe and who we are and our place in the universe. And when I say we, I mean anyone who's a human being. I was in the Peace Corps many years ago, and the people in the most remote parts of Africa wanted to look through my telescope and look at the rings of Saturn and go, wow, because that's what makes us more than just, you know, well-fed cows. If you think of the 7 days of creation, what's the goal, the seventh day? The day when we spend the time to contemplate the things that God has created. So being an astronomer or being a poet talking about the stars, That's part of our mission as human beings in love with God.
It's so incredible. You know, for those of us that are amateur stargazers, any advice for us?
Well, one thing is be sure to do it every day. Go out just once a day and take a look at the sky. But another thing, if I can, you know, say a little bit beyond where my own work, Pope Benedict had a marvelous homily at Easter Saturday night, 2012. And in it, he talks about the role of light in our lives. And he says, you know, we human beings create artificial lights that can blind us to God's lights. It's called light pollution. So a little bit that you can do to turn down the lights outside, the lights that are shining up where it's useless. You know, you want them on the ground where you can walk, but I'm not walking up there. Make our skies a little bit darker so we can see God's glory a little more clearly. Because as Pope Benedict said, that light pollution is a perfect analogy of what human sin is, us using our lights to try to blind ourselves to what God's lights are trying to tell us.
Well, Brother Guy, thank you so much for writing this book. Thank you for being you, and thank you for being here. We appreciate it. God bless you.
And thank you for letting us share this to the world.
And if you'd like to learn more about the Vatican Observatory, be sure to visit vaticanobservatory.org. Family, thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.